Welcome. If you're just joining, we're just about to get started. Hi, Lainey. Hi, so nice to see you. Lisa in Boston. Hi, Patty. I'm happy to see your picture. I assume you're behind it. Okay. Hi, so nice to see you. Hi. Okay, let's start. Some of you I know, some of you I don't know. All of you are extremely welcome. Thank you for being here. And I want to just take this hour to tell you what is involved in a new program that we're starting at the Open Heart Project beginning on March 18th, Buddhist Immersion and Meditation Teacher Training. I want to tell you the sort of inspiration behind the program, what I think it will offer you, and a little bit about how I feel about it, because it's very close to my heart. And then I'd like to go through the curriculum with you, so you have not in painful detail, but in some detail, so you have a sense of what will be involved. And then there will be time for questions or comments, should you have them. So I've taught meditation instructor training programs online through the Open Heart Project probably for the last 5 or 6 years, and I have loved doing it. In fact, it is my very favorite thing to teach. I love to teach how to teach because it is so creative and personal, and most of all, I would say, super instructive and helpful and powerful for the teacher. The teacher is always the one who benefits the most from whatever is being taught. I have people still coming in, so let me just welcome them. Welcome. If you're just joining or just getting started, thank you for making time for this. I was just mentioning some of the details about this program, where it comes from, and we'll go through the curriculum. I actually have slides that I'm going to share with you. And I was saying how much I love teaching how to teach, because what I've discovered is the path of the teacher is the ultimate path for the student of the Dharma. It requires an understanding of the practice and the principles behind the practice that is simply different than when you read it for your personal benefit, which is obviously extremely important, or hear it or journal about it, whatever you might do. But when you interact with the same material in order to transmit it, a different kind of learning occurs for you. I know there's some people here who are teachers, so I'm sure you know exactly what I mean. You have to make it your own to teach it. And making the Dharma your own is the absolute key to the journey of, dare I say it, enlightenment. So to teach is extremely intimate and personal endeavor. So I love teaching it, or I love helping people see the profundity of this path. So in the past, the way that we've taught the meditation instructor training has been geared particularly for people who want to offer meditation as part of their professional work. So the curriculum and the languaging was all geared to yoga teachers and life coaches and healthcare professionals and people that have training in some other background that want to add meditation instruction to what they offer professionally. If that's what you want to do, you will certainly learn how to do that through this program. But what I had wanted to do ever since I started teaching this was make it more Buddhist-y, was be more directly inclusive of the Dharma. It was never excluded. We were never pretending this is secular or science-based, although, you know, it's not science-based. But I wanted to be direct and clear about the Buddhist foundations that underlie this practice and that give it its magic. So there are many programs out there that separate the idea of being a meditation teacher or the Dharma or practicing meditation altogether from the Buddhist-y parts. Either specifically stating, this is secular. Great. That's fantastic. Super valuable. Or sort of just not saying, this is connected to a sutra. This is, these are called the four immeasurables. This is a teaching given by the Buddha 2,500 years ago. So I want to bring all of that together in learning how to teach meditation. It's very, to me, it's of extreme importance to have a strong foundation in basic Buddhist teachings, not from an academic perspective, but from a personal perspective. My favorite question to posit when studying something in the Dharma, or particularly, is not what does this mean, but what does this mean to you? What does this mean to you? And from however you are able to answer, or confused by answering, or insightful about answering that question, your teaching will arise in a magnetic way, whether you have great understanding or are confounded by the topic. If you have a genuine sense of this is what it means to me, what you teach will be magnetizing. Don't take my word for that. So there's a need for people trained to teach meditation. This is my opinion, obviously, the whole thing's my opinion, in a real, deep, rooted in wisdom way. Meditation is like tofu. It will just meet whatever, it will just take on the flavor of whatever environment it's presented in. So if you want to use it for self-help, you can. If you want to use it to become a better leader, you can. If you want to use it to get a better night's sleep, you can. And if you want to use it to become liberated from suffering for all time so that you can benefit other beings to do so as well, you can. So much of the training in how to teach meditation does not include that part. And we're not trying to become gurus or, you know, holy people or anything, but we want to look at the depths. Whether you ever go on to teach or not, and if you take this program, I certainly hope you will, but whether you ever do or not, you will attain a deeper understanding of what you're doing on that cushion that will last you for the rest of your life. And if you do go on to teach, you will have a strong foundation for doing so. So there's just a need for training that does not shy away from the depths, in my opinion. So the training, and I have somebody to show you about the curriculum, is very much based around what is called the three yanas, Y-A-N-A, which I'm sure some or many of you are familiar with. The three yanas, or vehicles, refer to the three main cycles of teachings associated with the Buddha. And our program is constructed to reflect each of the yanas and to also sort of traverse the cycle that the yanas represent. That sounds obscure. I'm going to explain exactly what I mean by that. So the Hinayana, H-I-N-A-Y-A-N-A, refers to the first cycle of teachings given by the Buddha. The very first things he said upon attaining enlightenment, and they include things like the Four Noble Truths, which we will examine, the fourth of which is the Noble Eightfold Path, which we will also examine in detail, and certain principles such that one needs, whatever you practice, to embark on the spiritual journey altogether. If you do not have these qualities, you're going to spin your wheels. I think it's pretty safe to say. And these qualities include things like simplicity. Like if you're trying to practice 10 things at once, it's going to be very chaotic. So can you simply do a practice or take your journey according to a set of principles, not a thousand sets of principles. The Hinayana teachings also involve teachings on discipline, which doesn't mean being mean to yourself. It means honoring what you're actually committed to. That's one way of looking at it. And also in the Hinayana teachings is renunciation, which doesn't mean only doing things that aren't fun. It means giving up bullshit, if I may say, just letting go of what's not essential, of what distracts you. So in our first cycle of this program, the first module is we'll be examining those things, the Four Noble Truths, simplicity, discipline, renunciation, and working on how you establish your personal practice to get not established only, but stabilize. Excuse me. The second module, and I'll give you the exact details on this in a moment. Once you have this sort of foundation in your practice, doesn't mean you're perfect, doesn't mean you got all your problems solved, but it means you have some sense of stability within yourself and in your practice. Not that everything's perfect, obviously, but you trust yourself. You trust yourself. Then naturally, your heart opens to others because other people aren't seen as only threats or possible benefits to you, because you have some sense of being seated firmly within your own life. So the heart opens, and this is where we find the second cycle of teachings, the Mahayana, or greater vehicle. Not greater meaning better, but greater meaning to me, you in the greater world. The first cycles of teachings are about you. The second cycle is about you with others. And here in the Mahayana are the teachings on how to open your heart and stabilize your heart in the open state. And it includes things like the four immeasurables, loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, equanimity, the six paramitas or transcendent actions, which I know many of you are familiar with. And if you're not, no worries, you will become familiar. Teachings on, okay, now that I've stabilized and now that I want to be a benefit in the world, because I know you do, whether your world is your house or the planet, this is what you do. These are the things you do. You practice the four immeasurables, the six paramitas, generosity, discipline, and so on. And we will examine those in some detail, practice them together. And okay, there's more, but I'm going to go on to the third cycle. So the heart, you have some stability, your heart opens. And then we come to the third cycle of teachings called Vajrayana, V-A-J-R-A, or adamantine vehicle, diamond-like vehicle, which refers in some ways to what you can do when you have some sense of stability in your personal being, your training in how to love, and you're not afraid, or you are afraid, but you're not afraid of being afraid, then there's a possibility of seeing the world more clearly. Sort of our vision becomes sharper and sharper. And we see, and the Vajrayana teachings are about, the magic of this world and the sacred nature of our lives, our environment, and every moment. So the Vajrayana teachings are about waking up in every moment. And these are the principles that inform the first three modules of our teaching and of our program. And then the fourth module is more very directly about how to teach. So let me go through what I have painstakingly and clumsily made on my computer. Can you see this thing that says Buddhist immersion and meditation teacher training?
Yes.
Yes, awesome, great, thank you. So Buddhist immersion and meditation teacher training. This is the cover. And the four curriculums, four modules, as mentioned, that make up the curriculum are based on the Hinayana view and simplicity, the Mahayana view, opening and stabilizing your heart. Can you see this? Is it too small? You can see it, okay? Okay, good. The Vajrayana view, entering the sacred world. And then the profound path. I believe it is the most profound path, the path of the teacher. So in module one, our first class, we will talk about the fundamentals of meditation on the Buddhist path. What is it? What is it not? What is the mindfulness part? What is the awareness part? More detail on the three yana view. And where our practice of shamatha vipassana, or mindfulness awareness meditation, where does it live? Does it live in the Hinayana, the Mahayana, the Vajrayana? The answer is yes, but mostly Vajrayana. So where does it fit within the great scheme of Buddhist meditation practices, which is vast? In the second class, we'll jump right into the Dharma, the Four Noble Truths, which include the Noble Eightfold Path. We'll look at the most common misconceptions about meditation practice, so we don't have to get lost in them. And we'll look at the classical obstacles to meditation practice that we all encounter, and should you go on to teach, your students will encounter. And the obstacles include things like laziness, of which there are three kinds. Doesn't mean you're a lazy bum. Forgetting the instructions. And the third main category is called laxity / elation, which means being too loose or too excited about your practice. But we'll talk about those. These are obstacles that all practitioners face. And in class three, in this first module, we'll talk about how to keep the practice sacred, how to keep snatching it back from the jaws of self-improvement, which is very important. I want to improve many things about myself. But if we feed this practice into the self-improvement machine, it will sort of come out the other end shredded. This is actually a chance to untether yourself from the tyranny, if I may say, of self-improvement, and then the magic arises. And one of the ways to keep the practice sacred is to acknowledge your lineage or lineages, your heritage, your ancestors, who teaches you? Who do you admire? What are you made of? We want to bring that to the practice, not exclude it. We're certainly not wanting to culturally appropriate anything or pretend to be Tibetan or anything like that. So we have to bring our own cultures into it. We have to bring our own lineages. So we'll talk about what those lineages are and how to identify them. And then in module two, we'll go right into the heart opening piece. And class four, the four immeasurables, just as mentioned, we'll talk about loving kindness meditation, what it is, how to practice it, the six paramitas or transcendent actions of a bodhisattva, of an awakened being, generosity, discipline, patience, exertion, meditative absorption, wisdom. This we could spend the whole 15 weeks on, those six things. They're extraordinarily profound and interesting and simple at the same time. In class six, we'll talk about working with strong emotions, because I'm sure I don't have to tell you this, because we've all experienced it in our own meditation practice at some point, and others who we may work with certainly will too. Meditation increases vulnerability and makes you more pointedly aware of your pains and your joys. So we want to talk about working with strong emotions, because though meditation may be presented as a way to quell emotion or feel peaceful all the time, it is not in this view. It is a way to meet strong emotions, extend the hand of friendship to even your most shattered heart, and learn the wisdom in that opening. So we'll talk about working with strong emotions. I wrote a book once called The Wisdom of a Broken Heart. We'll touch on the brokenhearted warrior and what that means. And then I can't say that any of these are my favorite, but this is my favorite. We're going to spend 2 weeks looking at the Enneagram, which if you're familiar with it, great. If you're not, no problem. Ennea is the Greek prefix for nine, and it talks about nine ways of being in the world. I wrote a book about it recently called The Buddhist Enneagram. And the reason I'm including it here is because it is my primary tool as a teacher. And if I want to teach you how to teach, whether you're going to teach your kids or teach the whole universe, having some sense of your style of communicating and teaching is extremely important. And I've been studying the Enneagram for 30 years, as long as I've been studying Buddhism. And for me, and the reason it's in this Mahayana heart opening section is that it is the most profound support for greater compassion, first towards yourself and then towards others. So we may think, yeah, I want to be a compassionate person. Great. I know you do, and I'm sure you are. But then you go out into the world and you encounter all sorts of mishigas, all hijinks ensue. And then what? Where does the heart of compassion go? How do you get it back? Well, the Enneagram is like a roadmap for extending compassion. So I think it's hugely important, and you do not have to, but I believe that you will at least find it interesting. And then in module 3, we'll begin with a day of retreat. So all of these classes on these 15 weeks are on Saturdays from 10 a.m. to 12 noon East Coast time. But this day of retreat will be, we haven't figured out the exact hours yet, it'll be like 9 to 5 or 10 to 4, something like that. Because in the middle of the program, and before we dive right into the Vajrayana, the sacred view, the mystical teachings, as it were, I want us to have a full day of settling, of just not learning, not taking notes, just practicing together. A full day of practice. As you may know, in every great wisdom tradition, there is an esoteric branch, a mystical branch. In Islam, it is the Sufi tradition. In Judaism, it is Kabbalah. Every religious tradition has an esoteric branch. In Buddhism, the esoteric branch are the Vajrayana practices. And that's what I've been trained in. The other traditions are exoteric. And the Hinayana and Mahayana teachings belong to the exoteric worlds, very important. But now we're going into the esoteric world, which easily is confused with weird woo-woo and nuttiness, if I may say. So we want to look at this esoteric, sacred, mystical world with clarity and both feet on the ground, with at the same time, absolute openness to what we can't see with our conventional minds, because that's what the esoteric traditions always address, what we can't see with our ordinary minds. So we'll start with a day of retreat. I'm very much looking forward to that. Class 10 will be on sacred environment. How do we create a sacred world that gives confidence and joy and energy to ourselves and others? Because we think, well, in order to be confident and joyful and so on, I have to fix my problems in here. And then I will be able to be those things. And yeah, please, yeah, let's all fix the problems in here. But these teachings say you can create an environment that gives you confidence, that gives you joy, that continually reminds you of the sacred nature of all phenomena, things we love, things we don't love. There's something living and profound and awake. Sacred environment means noticing the wakefulness in yourself and in your experience and in others and so on. And then class 11, we'll talk about working with energies. your own and others. And this is extremely interesting to me, and I think very, very important. What do you do when you meet the energy of anger, the energy of pride, the energy of grasping, the energy of your own sorrows? How do you work with energy in a practitioner way? How do you ride the waves of emotion and sensation and experience to stay grounded, to stay non-attached? But non-attachment gets a very bad rap. In some sense, the whole path, all the yanas, everything we might talk about is pointing to the importance of non-attachment. But non-attachment is most often presented as something really icky, like you don't care. Non-attachment is nothing bothers me. Happy things make me kind of happy. Sad things don't keep me down for long. I'm not attached. That's bullshit. I mean, let me just say straight up, that is not what is meant by attachment. In fact, attachment is almost the opposite. And it relates very clearly, very directly to how to work with energies, because non-attachment doesn't mean converting all phenomena into an equal tone with a range like this. Rather, it means riding the waves of what you do encounter with a sense of looseness and presence and wakefulness. And when you feel joy, you are lousy with joy. And when you feel rage or sorrow, you are riddled with it. And then it's gone. So non-attachment has more to do with surfing the endless waves rather than being in a still pond with no waves, if that makes sense. So we'll talk about how to do that. That's a high skill. But totally doable, because even if you fall off, that's part of what you're riding. So, oh, I suck at this. Okay. Let me see, what does it feel like to suck at this? Excuse my language. Okay, and then module 4, I call it the profound path, the path of the teacher. Class 12, we'll talk about how do you create a container for teaching? How do you create an environment where the Dharma can be transmitted, whether you have given it the instruction 1 million times or 0 times? How do you create a container for the Dharma to arise? How do you give one-to-one instruction without painting yourself into a corner of, I don't really know anything, I'll do my best, or the opposite but related corner of, I'm a guru, I'm a teacher, do what I say? How do you make it direct and personal and real? How do you teach authentically? And the next class, how do you teach in a small group, should you ever want to? How do you give a talk, which is a very fun thing to consider? How to answer questions. And I included this because I went to a talk actually over the weekend on Zoom with teachers who were very well trained, but the way they answered questions did not seem to me to be helpful. So I started to think, well, what is the helpful way to answer questions? And that includes things like answering not from what you've read, but from what you know. So if we've ever studied together, you may have heard me say a million times, don't take my word for this or anything. Do not, and I really mean that. And that is maybe the most important teaching stance. Don't take my word for it. You have to figure it out yourself, and I will try to help you. What does it mean? What does it mean to you? And when you share from your experience, it must be from what you know. Not what I said, not what Buddha said, not what anybody else said. From what you've heard, contemplated, and then validated or not. If you haven't been able to validate it, then don't worry about it. But that's where you share from, your personal knowing. And you could also say my other favorite, which is, I don't know. I do not know. So in all cases, we want to keep it very personal. Not friendly personal, like, because teacher student there's non-parity in that relationship, but still has to be very real. It's a very interesting mark to hit. How do you set boundaries? Because it's very easy to be too close or too far, or for students to try to get too close or too far, then you don't know. But we want to set boundaries, and we want to talk about things that I believe very strongly must be included in conversations about teaching spiritual practices. The importance of diversity and what we may be doing to discourage or to make others feel unwelcome. And it's not written here, but some sensitivity to trauma, because though meditation is often presented as good for everyone all the time for everything, that is absolutely not so. It can actually be harmful. So we want to talk about developing some sensitivity to trauma and what you might do should that sensitivity reveal that this teaching this person is not a good idea, and so on. And then 14th class is about how to encourage consistency in your own practice and the practice of others you might teach. And that has to do with recognizing the three jewels, the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, three jewels that light the way on this journey. And we'll talk about those in detail. And then the final class is a test. It's called a warrior's circle. And I'll say more about that in a minute. But first, let me just, because I have all the requirements on another fabulous slide. So I think what makes this program different is, first and most important, it's live. We're doing it together, you and me. Heart to heart, mind to mind. There's no videos and then questionnaires, and we do it in real time together. And that is extremely important, because this is very nuanced and personal material. So it would not do to just say, here, email me with any questions. Every time I've taught this program, the most wonderful thing about it is how much people appreciate each other and the support of a community. It just arises. Relationships are made, friendships are had, little irritations arise, people work through them. That is very rare. Mostly there's just people wanting to be there for you and with you. And it's great. It's lovely. And then investigation of the teaching path. We're looking at teaching as a path, not only as a job. If you want to make it your job, please do. It's the best job in the world, if you ask me. But it's also a path. It's a profound path. And the next word says not. I must have left the rest of the words out. I don't know what I meant to say there, but I must have saved too soon. It's not something. The Enneagram is part of this program, which is rare. And as far as I know, absolutely unheard of in a meditation teacher training. And this is the real deal. I happened to write that twice. I must have been getting tired. This is the real deal. This is the real deal. We're taking a deep dive. We're looking at powerful teachings. There's no L-I-T-E in this. I mean, it's also, I think, incredibly fun and warm and sweet and beautiful. It's very real. It's very real. These are the real teachings. And then also what makes this special is you. That is not a typo. That is on purpose. Because it always amazes me how the causes and conditions bring the perfect people to this program. So you. Now the requirements are real. So let me just go over them briefly. You're asked to practice daily. And if you miss a day, okay, you miss a day, but just come back. And this is the essence of the program, is because we can only teach what we know. And if we are not practicing, you know, life things come up and you can't, that's different. But a commitment to a daily practice for the length of this program, which is 15 weeks, and hopefully thereafter. Because if you want to teach, but you're not practicing, it's going to not work for you or anyone else. Attendance is a requirement because, as mentioned, this is rich and detailed and not complicated from an intellectual standpoint, but to make it your own involves conversation and contemplation and just being in a real class environment. So attendance is mandatory. Watch me pointy. That said, you know, life comes up and so on. So you can miss one class, but not the first class and not the last class and not the day retreat. So if something comes up and you're like, oh, I got to miss something too, tell me, we'll try to figure something out. But this is very serious. And every time I've taught this, I have to tell someone, you don't pass, you don't certify because you didn't fulfill the attendance requirement. And they're like, but I only missed two classes. But like, okay, can only miss one. Let me just say that again. There's homework. After each class, you'll be asked to write a short essay and then post it to our online private forum on the asking you to reflect on that week's content specifically, not the whole thing. Basically a question to respond to. And then further, you're asked to respond to two other people's essays, two other students, not to critique, not to correct, obviously, but just to say, this is how it made me feel to read what you wrote. This is what you made me think of, or so to share your reactions to two people's essays. And then you will give me instruction. Sometime in the last couple of weeks of the program, you'll get a link to make an appointment, I guess it's called, with me. And you'll give me, we'll talk about the program. How did it go for you? What did you like? What do you think could have been better? What do you need? And then you'll give me meditation instruction. And that's very important, obviously, not so that I can judge you, like, are you doing it perfectly? But so that you and I can feel that you have made a personal connection to this and you know how to teach it from the heart. So that's different for everyone. Some people just memorize an instruction and repeat it. That's okay, but it's coming from here. So you'll give me instruction. And then the very last class is what's called a warrior's circle. And it is a test. There'll be about 30 questions on the test. You get all the test questions and answers in advance. You know, before the program begins, you get a workbook that has all the curriculum details and readings and things like that, and all the test questions and test answers. They're basically the most frequently asked questions about meditation. And then at the last class, you have to answer one question, but you don't know which one it is. And I don't know which one it is because all the questions will be in a basket and I'll pick one out and I'll read it to you and you'll answer it in the classroom and then the next person. So what we're looking for in these answers is that you have a sense of what the answer is and that you're able to express it in your own voice. So those are the basics. If you have questions, you can message me. If you don't want to ask them right now. And I'm going to stop sharing and ask. Hi. What are your questions, comments? You can raise your hand, your human hand or your digital hand, or you can type something in chat. But please don't hesitate. Okay, Molly, thank you for not hesitating. Hi.
Hi. Hi. Sounds really fabulous, first of all. Thank you.
Oh, good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Will there be certain books that you write? You did say readings and things like that. Mm-hmm. I just wondered if there were certain books or things that we would need to have.
Yeah, good question. Right now, three. Cutting Through Spiritual Materialism by Chögyam Trungpa Rinpoche. And then my own Start Here Now, because that has all the things I know about meditation in it. And then for the Buddhist Enneagram, for when we talk about the Enneagram.
Okay.
There may be something else. In the past, we've included Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind by Suzuki Roshi, which I think is a very, very important text. The very first books my own meditation teacher suggested I read 30 years ago when I said, how do I learn more about this? He said, Cutting Through Spiritual Materialism and Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind. And I believe those remain the foundational books. So, but right now, those three. And then there are going to be articles and so on, but I will JPEG them and you'll be able to get them for me. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, thank you. I already have some socks. Yeah, thanks.
You're welcome. What else? Please don't be shy. I'd love to hear what you're thinking. Karen Moon.
Hi. And what will be the requirements or asks for group connection? I thought I read that there might be like offline topics or times that you're with groups.
Yeah. Thank you for asking that. So it's communicating via the homework assignments. That's not exactly groups. And then what I'm going to suggest is randomly assigned to groups, depending on how many people are in the program. For, I hate to use the word accountability, but I'm going to suggest a WhatsApp group for up to say 5 or 6 people. Because one of the asks in the class that I didn't mention is that you keep a journal about your practice. And it can be very simple. Meditated for 0 minutes today. Meditate for 20 minutes. Fell asleep. Or meditate for 20 minutes. Became enlightened. Whatever it is. And that you share that journal with your WhatsApp group. And that you have a sense of ongoing support throughout the program. That these are your people to connect with should you want to. Which I'm going to ask that you do. How does that sound to you, Karen?
Great. I did a few, like many years ago, I did a positive psychology course and we met together for a week and then we broke up in groups. And for the year before we met at the end, we connected every week and it was very powerful. So I'm happy about
that. That's wonderful.
That drew me to it. Yes.
That makes sense. I was thinking of asking for a peer group meeting each week. And then I just thought, well, maybe that would be too much for people. But I know what you're saying. It is so valuable.
Yeah.
So what we can do with the WhatsApp group is suggest that as an option.
Mm-hmm.
But I know everyone is very, you know, it's hard to put another thing in there. But what you're saying is absolutely true. It is extremely powerful. And in the Open Heart Project Sangha, which, by the way, when you complete this program, successfully, which I'm sure you will, you get a certificate saying that you are certified to teach meditation as it is taught in the Open Heart Project, and not just in the Open Heart Project, generally in Tibetan Buddhist world. And also come a year of Sangha membership in the Open Heart Project Sangha, which is my online community where there are peer groups that meet every week. And they're incredibly valuable. Same people, same time each week, as well as other classes and courses and chances to practice together. So I wanted to mention that too. Julie, hi.
Hi. I am super excited about this learning opportunity. It sounds amazing.
Oh, that's great.
Some hesitancy that's coming up in me has to do with like how much time you may, could you estimate maybe like how much time in a week we need to devote to some things like homework and not the meditation person, that's, but the other stuff.
Sure, absolutely. Very good and important question. So aside from the class time, which is 2 hours a week, I suggest you leave 45 minutes to 2 hours for homework and reading. Depends on how much time you have. If you don't have much time, you can do it in 45 minutes. If you want to spend more time and stretch out a little bit, you can.
Per day?
Per week. So I would say 3 to 4 hours per week.
Okay.
Including the class time, not including the meditation.
Okay, thank you. That was helpful.
Okay, good. Lisa says in chat, what the retreat day is. Or is it a secret? It is not a secret. It will be like a meditation retreat, which means sitting, taking a break, sitting some more, having a discussion about something related, sitting some more, having lunch or dinner, depending on where you are, and sitting some more. So it'll be a lot of sitting, but it won't be like 2 hours of sitting with no break. Be, I don't know what yet, 20 to 40 minutes of sitting and then a stretch break, another 20 to 40, maybe 45 minutes, and then a little conversation. So it will be obviously very sit-centric, but not in an onerous way. I always think, oh, I can't go on a meditation retreat for a week. I can't sit there. But it's never, you know, you sit, you walk, you eat, you take a break. So anyway, that's what it'd be like, sitting, little break, sitting, conversation, and so on. Does that answer your question, Lisa? I hope so.
Yes, please let me know. Thank you. It does.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Roseanne. Hi, Roseanne.
Hi, Susan. How are you?
Hi. I'm good. Thank you. How are you?
Good. I was wondering if this iteration, you will be the sole teacher, or will Jenna or be a teacher also, or are you going to have guest teachers as you have done in the past?
I will have guest teachers. Unfortunately, not Jenna. Jenna, who has been my co-teacher since this began, and she's a fantastic teacher. If you've never met her, you know. She's going to start teaching meditation instructor training to her professional group, which is nutritionists. And she's developing a program specifically for people that work with mindful eating and eating disorders, which is great. But there are guest teachers drawn from the pool of teachers that you may already know if you have studied, you know, been at the morning meditations in the Open Heart Project Sangha. Marissa Viola will be a guest teacher. Crystal Gundrud will be a guest teacher, and perhaps one or two others, but it's mostly going to be y'all and me. And I hope that will be okay. Does that answer your question, Roseanne?
Yes, thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for asking. Anything else? How much previous knowledge of Tibetan practice / theory is required to take the course previously instructed in Zen? That's wonderful. If you've been instructed in Zen, you have a wonderful background. No knowledge is required of Tibetan practice or theory. So if you know things, great. But this program, while we will be talking about many specifics of many teachings, the Four Noble Truths and the Paramitas and so on, it's very practice oriented as opposed to theory oriented. Theory is very important, but you don't need to know anything or have a background. Although if you do, great. So you can come in with a lot of study, or you could come in with a little study, but a love of the practice. So, and if you're previously instructed in Zen, we're already related. So I would say, yay. Just a short story about when I was, just maybe 5 or 6 years ago, when I was going to teach something called Oryoki from the Zen tradition, which is it's a way food is served and consumed and cleaned up after in a Zendo. But I've only practiced it in the Tibetan tradition that I've been in. And I loved Oryoki. I've been on retreats that lasted for several months and every meal was served Oryoki style. And I really, at first I hated it because it made me grumpy because I was hungry and I just wanted to eat. But then I just became enraptured with the sort of ballet of it. It was so beautiful. And I was going to teach on a retreat for someone else, supporting someone else who was the main teacher. And she wanted to know if somebody would be willing to be the Oryoki master, meaning the person that sort of guided the whole retreat into the practice of Oryoki. And I was like, oh, me, I love Oryoki. So I was very excited to do that. And then I got to the retreat center and I realized I wasn't good at Oryoki. And I also had kind of forgotten how to do it. So somebody lived at the retreat center who really was an Oryoki master, and he agreed to refresh me and walk me through the details and do this chant at this time and you eat like this. And I said, I really love Oryoki, but I'm not very good at it. And he, without missing a beat, said, well, that is the best combination for being a good teacher, is you love it. And there's some sense of, I'm still studying it. I'm still a little fumbly with it, but I love it. That's the key, I think. So long-winded answer, nothing is required. But if you love the practice, that's important. Anything else? We have just a minute or so left, a couple minutes, if you have anything. Oh, I know what I should do. I'm looking at my other computer screen over here. Let me put the link in here in case you want to find it. All the pricing information is in here. All the details, the curriculum that I just mentioned. There's an early bird price until February 19th. If you're already a Sangha member, you get an additional discount. And there are two full scholarships offered. So all the details. And if you've ever done meditation training, instructor training with me before, maybe one or two of you have, you can attend for half price because I want you to be able to add to what you've already learned. Dominic, hi.
Did you say, you mentioned that this is trauma-informed or?
I mentioned we were going to talk about trauma sensitivity, but I'm not a therapist and I'm not trained, but I know people who are. I have had enough experiences myself and also worked with teachers who are trauma-informed to be able to at least give some sense of this is what to look for. This is what to be aware of. This is who not to teach. This is where to draw a boundary. This is how to sense trauma. Because for the 6 years or so that I've been teaching this, that has been part of what has been taught. So we'll bring that into it here. Does that answer your question or not?
Yeah.
Does it? So it's important. I'm glad you brought it up. It's a very important topic. Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you, Dominic. Nice to see you. Okie doke. So it would be great to see you there. Again, if you have any questions, you can email me. It's limited to 35 people. Which would be great if there were 35, but I don't want to be, I've taught it before with 60 and it's too much. So I want it to be manageable for everyone. So that's the story. thank you for making time to do this. And if you're watching the recording, thank you to recording people for making time to watch this. Let's close formally, please, by acknowledging our wish to be of benefit, honoring each other for that wish, and by rousing the aspiration that wherever we go with this information, this opportunity, doing it now, not doing it now, that whatever you choose will be of greatest benefit to all beings, including you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.